Hi, Daphne.
Hi, Gail. Oh, I'm never going to get over it. I just saw her. My mom's face just cringed so badly. You know, that gives you wrinkles, right?
I know. That's why I don't even drink out of a straw, because I don't want those lip lines.
Yeah, tough shit.
I don't drink out of a straw and I don't have lip lines. Don't make people think I have lip lines.
Well, I didn't say you had lip lines. I said when you make that face, it'll give you wrinkles.
Yeah.
It'll prematurely age you.
Yeah. I can't. Well, I don't know. Maybe don't call me Gail. I don't know.
Hi, Mom. And then she smiles.
See?
Now she's happy because I called her Mom. How's your week?
Good. Busy. Long.
Why do you act weird when I ask you how your week is?
I don't know, because I feel like people don't give a shit how our week was.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that's probably fair. So should I jump right into my disturbing fact?
I think you should.
Okay. This is weird. I'm just going to preface it by this is weird. This is disturbing. I saw this somewhere and I was like, what? And then I looked up to see if it was true. It is. It's gross. You could use blood as a substitute for eggs.
Ew. What? So you can have a blood omelet?
Yeah, basically.
Over so easy says, blood?
Blood plasma protein is predominantly...
Oh, because it's albumin.
Yeah, albumin. Uh-huh. It's at 50 to 60%, which is heat coagulable.
Mm-hmm.
And it produces a stable foam and has good emulsification properties. So basically, you could use it in lieu of an egg or an egg white. And I'm going to give you the measurements if you want to do that.
I don't know that you should be giving that information out.
Well, it's public.
I know, but do you want to be responsible for sharing it?
Well, if we have any serial killers listening, this is how you can, you know, substitute eggs for blood. So it's 65 grams of blood for one egg or 43 grams of blood for one egg white.
What size egg?
For a 58 gram egg is the whole egg or 33 grams of egg white.
Okay. So is that a small egg, a jumbo egg, a medium egg?
I would say that's pretty small. An average egg.
Okay.
A store-bought egg, which we don't use.
Okay, Miss Prima Donna. Although we don't.
I was going to say I am a prima donna and I will never eat another store-bought egg in my life. Right? Unless it's like I'm eating at a restaurant.
Unless you're forced to.
Yeah. I'm like, is this farm fresh? Doesn't taste like it.
Not doing it.
Not gonna do it.
Yeah, that's fucking disgusting.
I was hoping you'd never heard that before.
Why would I have fucking heard that? I have my Betty Crocker cookbook and it says, if you don't have eggs, go ahead and draw your own blood and you can use that instead.
Or that's a real red velvet cake. You're welcome.
Right? Just cut the tip of your finger off. You can substitute your own blood.
Ugh. That's so gross.
So nasty. Wow.
You're welcome for that. Any serial killers out there? You are also welcome. Or if you're allergic to eggs, you're welcome.
Do you think it's a substitute if you're allergic?
Probably. I'm sure you're not allergic to blood.
I guess probably not, since it's in your body.
Oh, except for if it's the, what's it called?
Albumin.
Yeah, if you're allergic to that. But then you'd be allergic to yourself. Oh my God, I'm going down a rabbit hole here.
Yeah, you are.
I have rabbit holed. How's that for a disturbing fact?
Fuck.
I've been so ready to give you that one. And I know you've been ready to give me this case. So what do you have for us today, Mama?
I have been ready to give you this case. So this is the story of Tara and Stephen Grant. Tara was born June 28th, 1972, to parents Gerald and Mary Destramp. See, I hate names.
I'm sorry that you hate names.
Well, I don't hate names, but you look at them and you think you have it, and then you go...
Names are hard.
Yeah, exactly.
We literally had this conversation before we sat down to record that I said that my basil plant got wrecked, and my mom said that she thought one of her friends pronounced her last name as Basil. Or is it Basil? Don't know. If you're listening, please let us know.
I can ask her next time I see her.
Yeah, because I go, oh, fuck, my basil plant got wrecked, Mom.
Okay, names
are hard.
Her parents had only been married for 6 months when Tara came along. They lived in Escanaba in Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Gerald went by the nickname Dusty, and he was a Vietnam veteran.
I'm sorry, what year was she born?
She was born in 1972.
Okay.
The summer of 1972, she's a June baby.
Okay, so she's...
Don't do it.
Either a Libra, not a Libra, no, a Taurus or a Cancer. There you go.
Cancer, probably. June 28th.
Oh, Cancer for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, here we go. That's awesome. Her dad was Dusty, was a Vietnam veterinary.
Veterinary specialist.
I was going to say he was a veterinarian, but he wasn't. He was a vet. A veteran
who combat.
Yes, a combat veteran who was honorably discharged in 1972. After his career with the military was over, he began working as a wastewater treatment operator. Mary, Tara's mom, had worked as a dental assistant until she had Tara. It sounded like it was a question, but it wasn't. She was a dental assistant.
A dental hygienist.
It says assistant. I don't know. Maybe it's the 70s. Maybe hygienist wasn't a thing.
Okay.
Yeah. And then when she had Tara, then she started she became a stay-at-home mom because that's like a whole fucking job.
Yeah, truly. That's, I hate it when people are like, oh, you're just a mom.
Right.
Oh my God. Couldn't be me. I have dogs. I'm a stay-at-home dog mom.
Yeah.
Fuck my life.
Thank you.
They're crazy.
Too much.
Oh my gosh. I was trying to train them today.
To do what?
Yeah, well, you should look at my legs. How do you think training went?
Yeah, Daphne lost.
Yeah, I lost the battle. I lost the war. And I was like, oh, maybe if I give this one a Kong with some peanut butter in it, maybe she'll let me trim her nails.
That was the fight.
That was one of the fights. And then the fight happened when the Kong fell on the floor. And then another one of them grabbed the Kong. And then the first one... This is the one that got stung by a bee. This is the dumbass.
Winnie.
Yeah, Winnie.
She's not a dumbass. She's just so freaking ass stubborn.
Yeah, she's a douchebag.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Love her to bits and pieces, but she's an asshole.
Totally.
She's my heart and soul. So that's probably where she gets it from.
I was going to say, she's also a Sagittarius like you. So, you know, I don't know. Could be a theme.
Yeah, we had multiple fights today, Winnie and I. We argued all day.
I like how Daphne has arguments with her dogs.
Oh, yeah.
She always tells me that with her dog, her old dog. She's always like, Pixie and I are fighting. I'm like, how do you fight with a fucking dog?
She's this sassy ass old shih tzu. She loves to fight with me.
This is what I live with. But I love you anyway.
I love you too.
Okay, shall I get back to it?
Yes. Sorry.
It's okay. So
stay at home mom.
Yeah. Stay at home mom. In 1974, the family moved to Rock, which was closer to Dusty's work. And they purchased a homestead there in Rock and they remodeled and they vigorously worked on the property in order to make it like suitable for a young family. Because apparently it was in pretty bad shape when they bought it. It was a fixer upper. Yeah. And they didn't have Chip and Joanna.
Right.
Or Aww. Cole and Chelsea.
Oh, Cole and Chelsea. ship.
So in March, I've got it not so. In March of 1974, the family had another daughter named Alicia. Tara and Alicia were super close as sisters, you know, because one's born in the middle of 1972 and one's born in 74. Yeah, and I don't know exactly when Alicia was born, but yeah, they got to be close in age. They took riding lessons together. They were in the 4-H club together. They had a ton of animals.
4-H?
4-H. It's like a farm thing.
Okay.
Yeah, that's why you don't know what it is.
Like 4-H?
Yeah.
Is that like H-H-H-H? Yes. I think that was only three.
H-H-H-H. 4-H's. Shit. So, yeah, it's a farm thing. I don't know exactly what it is. I just know it's a farm thing. Because I hear about it in relation to farms.
Got it.
Like, if you go to the fair, there's, like, the 4-H club kids that have, like, animals. And they're not, like, dogs and cats. They're, like, pigs and chickens.
Oh.
So it's, like, farm stuff.
Okay, got it.
So they had a ton of animals that they raised together on their farm. If I say so again, someone please fucking punch me in the face.
How about in the throat? Then you won't be able to say so.
That's fair. All right. Anyway. They raised sheep, chickens, cows, pigs, and rabbits. Tara took special pride in the animals that she was responsible for raising, and she even took first place for one of her pigs at an Upper Peninsula State Fair. She also was part of a girls' BB gun team, and they won a championship.
Oh, that's really cool. Okay, so I would own a pig. Not necessarily like one of those teeny tiny ones that actually grows up to be giant.
A Vietnamese potbelly pig, and you get it, and it's like the size of a fucking chihuahua, and then it turns into like an 80-pound pig.
I would get like a 70-pound pig.
Oh, okay. So that's a big difference. My friend had a pig, and his name was Spam.
That's so cute. I had a pig at my house one day. It's one of my dad's friends. She brought her pig over, and the little dick face walked into my garden and started eating my zucchini. I was like, ooh, buddy. I was like, I'm gonna smack you.
That's what pigs do.
And then he oinked at me, and I was like, okay, so don't eat me. Keep loving the zucchini.
Yeah, because you know, if you kill someone, you could just dump it at a pig farm and it'll be totally eaten.
I did know that, yeah.
Yeah.
I saw the Criminal Minds episode.
Another serial killer tip.
Yeah,
there we go. All of Willie Picton, right?
I don't know what the guy's name was, IRL.
Willie Picton.
Oh, there you go.
Canadian serial killer.
Yeah.
Who had the pig farm.
Yep.
Yeah.
And he was special needs, yeah?
No. Oh. That's the Criminal Minds episode.
Okay,
got it. A little creative license that they took.
Got it.
I lost my place again.
She won a BB gun thing.
Oh, yeah. She was on a team for BB gun. A BB gun team, and they won a championship. And all girls BB gun team won a championship. In high school, she was a straight-A student, a cheerleader. She was on the track team and the basketball team. She wasn't known to be a partier. Kind of doesn't sound like she had time, right?
Right.
She also had a job at a shoe store, which is where she became interested in business management and marketing.
Oh.
In stereo. She really wanted to attend a big university, but her parents wanted her to stay home and talked her into going to community college, where she earned her associate's degree in business in 1992. After getting her associate's degree, she did end up moving to Lansing, Michigan, in order to attend the University of Michigan. In a journal entry, Tara wrote that she wanted to go to a school far from home to establish her independence.
Aw.
Yeah. I get that.
I understand that. Yeah. Except for when I tried to do that, it didn't work out so well for
me. It's okay. You're still independent.
Oh, yeah. No. And then I got into my dream school, which the one I was going to go to was not my dream school. So everything happens for a reason.
Everything happens for a reason.
Yeah. I also got an associate's degree.
Except for bad stuff.
Yeah. Bad stuff. But it teaches you a lesson.
Well, some bad things that...
Okay, I was talking about myself personally.
Okay. I'm like, you know, bad stuff, you can't come back from, like, being killed.
Oh, I don't like where we're headed.
That doesn't happen.
I really like Tara.
Stephen Grant was born January 18th, 1970. He's a Capricorn.
Nice.
Although he doesn't sound like a Capricorn.
Okay.
Once we hear the description.
You're a Capricorn.
I am a Capricorn. He sounds nothing like me.
Okay.
All right.
Well, tell me.
Okay.
I'll establish if he sounds like you or not.
He was born to parents Al and Susan.
Serial killer. Oh, my God. Mom, is it you?
He was born to parents Al and Susan Grant. He was raised in a Detroit suburb called Sterling Heights. He had an older sister named Kelly. His father was an engineer with his own business, U.S. Grant Manufacturing Incorporated. His parents, and I don't know if it was an LLC or not, to an earlier conversation today. His parents divorced in 1985, and his mother was awarded full custody of both Stephen and Kelly, but Kelly chose to live with their dad, and they moved out of the family home, and then Stephen and Susan continued to live in the family home. Stephen was described as a loner and somewhat odd. One of his high school friends said that Stephen never talked about his home life or his parents' divorce. He was interested in cars and weapons as a teenager. He would go to the woods behind their house, and he would shoot guns.
Would he kill things?
I don't know. It didn't say that he killed stuff. He just shooted guns.
He shot guns?
Yes.
He shooted.
He shooted. This friend also said that Stephen had a tendency to exaggerate. And Stephen, in high school, he worked at a Mexican restaurant, and he met a girl who went to a different high school, and he asked her to his homecoming dance at his school, and she agreed to go. And he told the girl that he was a basketball star at his school, hoping to, like, impress her, you know, like, oh, Stephen, you play basketball and you're a star. You're amazing.
As if she wasn't going to find out.
Well, it just so happens that her dad was a guidance counselor at Stephen's school.
Oh.
So.
She really was going to find out.
Yeah, she was really going to find out. You know, her dad was like, hey, just FYI, he's lying. He's not a basketball star.
Right. He actually just hangs out in the woods behind his house.
Shooting guns.
Yeah.
When he's not working at the Mexican restaurant.
Right.
Which, I love Mexican food. I could totally work at a Mexican restaurant.
Oh, my
God. Except I don't want to be in customer service. I could work in the kitchen.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's that. But still, you had to deal with other people. But I guess that's any job, A. And B, oh, you know, I would have such bad cholesterol if I worked at a Mexican restaurant. Okay. I just love Mexican food.
Yeah. Yes.
You love it so much.
Same, same.
I could eat all the fresh corn tortilla chips.
Mmm. Oh, my God. Yes. Okay. Don't.
Okay.
So the girl broke it off, and she just told him, hey, motherfucker, I don't date liars.
Good.
And clearly, you're a liar.
Good for her.
Right? So I don't know if she said motherfucker. That's not a direct quote.
She wasn't like, listen here, buddy.
Right.
You're a liar, and leave me alone, fucker.
Yeah, that's probably a direct quote.
That probably is.
In 1989, Stephen was pulled over for going 70 miles an hour in a 45 mile an hour zone. And the officer who pulled him over, for some unknown reason that I couldn't find, found a Colt 45 in a bag in his car. So I don't know why the cop was looking in his car, other than maybe Stephen was, like, acting suspicious or something. But I could not find why the cop would search his car.
Right, in a bag.
But any hoodles.
It's not like it was, like, sitting on the seat and he looked in and saw it, said it was in a bag.
It could have been. I don't know, because there was no details. But it just said that the cop pulled him over for speeding and that he found a Colt 45 in his bag in his car.
In his bag, unless his bag is, like, sprawled open.
Well, we don't know. I just said I have no idea if the bag was open or the cop searched his car.
I was just talking about it.
I'm like, I literally just said I don't know. I feel like that's not really a relevant detail, other than the fact that I am curious about how the cop came to find the gun, but not that curious.
Right.
Okay. Stephen did not have a permit for the gun, so he was arrested for reckless driving and carrying an unpermitted concealed weapon. And he pled guilty to a lesser charge and paid a $500 fine, and he was released.
Sounds like that might have not been the right option.
Sounds like it. Yeah.
I just feel like the direction that we're heading in, Tara's good people, and they share the same last name, and he doesn't sound like good news. Just saying.
He's a bad news bear.
Bad news bear.
Stephen,
not a honey bear.
Stephen only attended college for a short time, and he dropped out, and then he began working as an aide for State Senator Jack Faxton. While she was in college, Tara met Stephen at a party, and they realized that they lived in the same apartment complex. And Stephen right away was like, ooh, hey, Tara. And she was like, friend zone. He was like, well, can I show you around? Because, like, obviously you don't know this area and stuff. And so they just started, like, hanging out casually and, you know.
Yeah. She was like, sure, you can be my friend.
Right.
You try anything else, motherfucker? You try.
Right.
Fuck around and find out.
When her grandma died.
I won a BB gun contest.
When her grandma died. I won a BB gun contest. Sorry. So when Tara's grandma died, she flew home for the funeral, and Stephen hopped in his car and drove up there to surprise her. Surprise! I came to the funeral!
Oh, my God, that's kind of weird.
It's weird. Although they weren't dating, you know? And he
told, what I'm saying. That's weird.
And he told her family that he thought that he should be there to support his friend. And after that, Stephen claims the next day that Tara called him and told him she was in love with him.
Uh-huh.
Right? I know. I'm like, this guy's such a bullshitter.
I'm like, it sounds kind of stalkery.
Right?
Not, hey, I'm so in love with you. Hey, I'm actually quite terrified of you. Remember I was telling you about that trophy in my room from the BB gun contest?
And he's like, it's fine. I have a Colt 45.
Right?
And two zigzags.
Yeah. That's all I could think about when you were talking about that. I'm like, where was it in the car? Like, how did the cop find it? And baby, that's all we need.
Oh, shit.
We can go to the park after dark,
smoke that tumbleweed. Okay, we need to stop. Because singing isn't our jam.
It isn't.
I mean, we like to do it, but, you know, probably you guys don't want to hear it.
Right.
So I'll get back to
more of a shower car time thing.
I'll get back to the story. Stay tuned. We're coming back.
We'll be back in 5 after this short commercial break.
Obviously, whether she told Steven that she was in love with him, nobody really knows. But they did start dating shortly after that. And she moved out of her apartment and into his apartment.
Oh, it's moving kind of fast.
Yeah. Well, and don't you wonder if it's like kind of a grieving relationship? Like her grandma died and he was there and, you know, that whole thing.
She's like, oh, I can lean on him right now because he showed up for me.
Right.
And maybe. I don't have to pay rent.
Just speculate. Well, they probably shared the rent, I'm guessing. In 1994, Tara graduated from MSU, that's Michigan State University, with her BS in business administration and marketing. Steven went to work at his father's machine shop because working in politics wasn't really an option for him anymore because the Democrats were on a downhill slide in the early 90s. And so jobs weren't available for him because the senator that he was working for was a Democrat. Okay. And obviously he got voted out.
Got it.
So when Tara first graduated, she couldn't find a job and she went to work for a temp agency. And she eventually was placed with a company that was named Morrison Knutson. The company was a construction company. Why did I say that? It was a construction company known for being involved in building the Hoover Dam and the Alaska Pipeline.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, one of the companies, because there were several companies.
Right, but it's one of the teams on board with
that. Yeah, exactly. So that's pretty...
That's impressive.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. The company was bought out by the Washington Group International, who hired Tara full-time, and she was there for the next 10 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so good for her. Her temp job really worked out for her.
Right. She found a good place to be.
She did find a good place to be. Steven and Tara were married in September of 1996. After the marriage, they bought a home in Shelby Township, which is just like north of Detroit. Everyone thought they were the perfect couple, the couple that has a great friendship and a great partnership. However, Steven seemed to control almost everything in their lives, like the activities, vacations, and all that kind of stuff. And Tara was just like chill. So she just rolled with it. She's like, whatever, you just plan it. But like her family felt like it was controlling. According to Alicia's husband, Eric Standerfer, Steven ruined a lot of family events and get-togethers. So unfortunately, they stopped planning family stuff together. And that's a super bummer because her and her sister were real close, you know?
Right.
And so, you know, don't let a relationship ruin your family life. Unless your family life is not as good as your relationship.
Right.
Just a PSA.
Yeah, no shit.
Tara had their first child in November of 2000. Her name was Lindsay. Steven became a stay-at-home dad when Tara went back to work after her maternity leave was over. Because remember, she's landed this really good job and he's working at his dad's machine shop.
Right.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Obvious roles.
Right. They had their next baby named Ian in November of 2022. And Steven said that they had
November of 2022?
Of 2002, sorry.
2002.
Yeah, that.
I was like, that's really recent.
Yeah, no.
That's a 22-year age gap. Like, shit. She's real fertile.
Nope, my bad. Sorry.
Mosaic's still dropping.
In November of 2002, Steven said that they hadn't planned on having another child so soon. And he said, again, his bullshit, that Tara supposedly went in to go get her depo shot and they gave her a flu shot instead.
Uh-huh.
Although, because of that fact that I gave you about medical scary shit.
Uh-huh.
Maybe.
Who knows?
Right? When I read that, I was like, oh, that's total bullshit. But then I read my disturbing fact and I was like, well, maybe.
Right. But they put that in your butt. Depo?
Well,
I feel like they probably wouldn't put the flu shot in her butt.
Well, they put it in a muscle. So
maybe.
I don't know. Anyway, that's Steven's claim. I feel
like
that's
an uncomfortable place unless you're like, can I please have it in the butt?
Don't say that again.
I did that on purpose.
I got that by the look on your face. So Tara started traveling for work a lot, and Steven was overwhelmed by taking care of a toddler and a newborn. Oh, poor Steven.
Right.
They hired a series of au pairs. Tara thought that having au pairs versus babysitters or an American nanny would add culture to their lives and give their children exposure to more than just like Michigan, you know?
What? So the au pairs are going to teach the kids Italian and French?
Yep. That's what she's hoping for. So some of the au pairs even taught the kids their language. And it's super cool because, you know, kids pick up languages really fast.
Oh, I know. I had this friend and she was completely fluent in Spanish as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And then she just stopped speaking it. And so she lost a lot of it.
Yeah. Use it or lose it. But kids really pick it up quickly. It seemed as if Steven just enjoyed having young, attractive women in the house, and he didn't really give a shit about the culture.
Oh, that's where this is going, you dirty pig. Steven, you.
Tara had the children in multiple activities and always kept them enrolled in multiple things at one time, including tutoring, which she felt like would give them an educational leg up, which of course it would.
Right.
And Tara made a note to herself one time, though, because I talked about how she journaled earlier, but she made a note to herself to remind herself that they were just kids and not to be like so critical and like hard on them. But she wanted her kids to be the best and excel. And she was giving them those, she was able to give them those opportunities because she had a good job and she was making good money. And obviously she's the main breadwinner.
Right. She was able to provide those resources for her kids.
Exactly.
Which is excellent.
Steven worked at his father's machine shop, still kind of off and on part time, just I think to get away from the kids a little bit because they have the au pair so he can get out. Right.
Right.
But that was the extent of his earnings. And as a result, their relationship kind of became rough. Like Tara's yearly bonus was more than Steven made in a whole year.
Oh,
so
wow.
Just her bonus.
Wow.
Wow. Right. Tara had a six figure a year job, and she traveled a lot for work, as I said earlier. In 2006, she took an assignment in Puerto Rico, and her office was in San Juan. She flew home on the weekends, but spent the rest of the week in Puerto Rico. That would be so fucking hard.
Yeah.
Could you imagine just flying home for the weekend all the way to fucking Michigan from Puerto Rico?
I know. Well, when we went to Puerto Rico, we had to lay over in Atlanta.
Yeah, it makes me tired just hearing about
it. I think it was Atlanta on the way there and then Dallas on the way back.
Yeah. It's
because there were no direct flights from Denver at the time.
Well, and there weren't any direct flights from Detroit to Puerto Rico either. Yeah.
So she had to do layovers everywhere.
Yep. Because Tara was earning so much money, they were able to move to the Washington Township. That's an area that was much more affluent than the Shelby Township that they had lived in when they first got married.
Right, that they had moved themselves into and had their kids in.
Right, exactly. Steven began hanging out at Buffalo Wild Wings near his dad's machine shop, and the staff knew him very well. They never knew what they would get, though. The nice, easygoing Steven who played trivia and paid for other people's dinners and drinks, or the Steven who bitched about working at his dad's machine shop, or bitched about Tara's family. He would, on some occasions, make up a story that he was a covert operator for Washington International, and he actually worked for Tara.
Oh, shut it, freak.
Right? He also bragged about his sexy young au pairs and said that all of them wanted him. And he even claimed that one of them undressed in front of the window so he could watch her.
Oh, God.
Yeah, right?
What a freak.
Yeah, Capricorn, I think not.
Liar, I think yes.
Yes. He also tried to pick up some of the waitresses at Buffalo Wild Wings, and he told people that he cheated. And I'm like, people. So the people at Buffalo Wild Wings where he like hangs out and like that's his.
Those are his. That's quote, his friends. Unquote.
Right. That's his friend group. So he told those people that he cheated on his wife, and it didn't matter because he was going to hell anyway.
Like, oh, my God.
Right. Okay.
I used to work at a restaurant. Why would you just like walk around and like say these things to people?
Because he's a.
I would look at somebody who would tell me these things so fucking weird. I would look at them so backwards and be like, Yeah. So we're not going to have this conversation, actually.
Right. Especially if they're just like hanging out at the restaurant all the time and you know who they are.
Right.
Well, although if he's a good tipper, then you got to be like, see you in your, oh, honey.
And then go in the back and be like, this fucking guy. All right. Sorry.
That's okay. But as we know, Stephen was known to be a liar. So everybody's like, yeah, okay. You're a covert operator that works for your wife and you also cheat on your wife. So whatever. But I'm pretty sure he wasn't lying about the going to hell part because he seems like a fucking major douche.
Right. Seems like there's probably a nice fucking hot coal spot waiting for him.
I don't disagree. Even though Stephen claimed to be cheating on Tara, he would get livid at the thought of her cheating on him, of course, because he's a control freak. Once he got into her emails and he saw that she was emailing an ex-boyfriend, and then he started to email the guy like he was Tara, and he was trying to get the guy to say something that would prove that Tara was cheating. And he told one of the waitresses at Buffalo Wild Wings.
Oh my God, this guy.
Right? And also eventually came clean to Tara's ex-boyfriend and told him he would hurt him if he kept emailing Tara. So
why was he emailing Tara, the ex-boyfriend?
I don't, because they're friends.
Or was Steven the one instigating the emails?
No, he got into her email and saw that she was emailing with an old boyfriend.
Okay.
So then he pretended to be Tara.
No, I know, but that's what I was wondering, if he like started it.
No, it was legitimate, like
happening.
Yeah, like, hey, how are you doing? How's your life? How are your kids? Like just kind of catching up with assumingly also a friend.
Right.
You know?
Right. So. Doesn't mean something nasty's going on.
No, it doesn't. Because if you're in a relationship with somebody, even if it doesn't work out, hopefully you could still remain friends.
Yeah.
Not in all cases, but in some.
That's the hope.
Yeah. Especially when you're young, you know?
Right.
It's like, hey, it's not working out, but let's go to the movies. Cool, cool.
Or let's not. Because Steven will get really jealous.
Right. He eventually came clean to the ex-boyfriend and told him that he would hurt him if he kept emailing with Tara. But also, he's a fucking liar. So we don't really know if that happened or not.
Right.
According to Stephen, he would frequently get mad at the au pairs and send them packing. He treated them as if they were property and not people. The truth of the matter was that most of them quit after only a short time because they couldn't deal with Stephen because he was such a liar and a douche. And of course, he acted...
And a weirdo.
Yeah, and he acted like they all wanted him, which I'm guessing they probably didn't.
Right. They're like, we're these cute young girls from other countries. We probably don't want you.
Right.
Because I'm assuming he's also probably hiring them based off of looks.
Well, that's what I, yeah. He just wanted the cute young girls.
And right. Well, that's what I'm saying. And if they're that cute, they don't need him.
Exactly. Eventually, they hired a beautiful 19-year-old German au pair named Verena Dierkes. Dierkes. Verena.
Okay. Verena.
Verena. Stephen immediately became totally fixated on her. On February 14th of 2007.
Valentine's Day.
Yep. Stephen Grant walked into the Macomb County Sheriff's Office and he said he was there to file a missing persons report. Deputy William Hughes was the deputy who took the report. Stephen claimed that he hadn't heard from Tara since the previous Friday, February the 9th, when they got into a fight. And he stormed out of the house. And she stormed out of the house. So this is 5 days before, right?
Right.
Before he's like going to go report his wife missing. He hasn't heard from her, talked to her, seen her, nothing in 5 days.
He's such a weirdo.
Yeah, he's something.
He's the worst.
So right away, Deputy Hughes was suspicious that Stephen had waited 5 days to report his wife missing. But also, Stephen had a scratch on his nose that was scabbed over. And he was literally looking at a notebook with notes about the incident that he was reporting. And I mean, like notes.
He's like, I can't recall this from memory. I had to write everything down as if this is scripted.
Right? Like, what the fuck? Like, you go to report your spouse missing and you have a fucking notebook of notes.
How Chris Watts of you.
Right? Exactly. Keep your story straight. So he told Hughes that he was a stay-at-home dad and he worked part-time for his dad's machine shop, and that Tara worked in Puerto Rico but came home on the weekends. And he proceeded to tell Deputy Hughes that he was over Tara being gone all week and only home on the weekends, and that they had gotten into it and she had left, and she had called him from the Newark airport on February 9th and said that her flight had been delayed because of weather. So he's telling the detective all this, right? Right. Or the deputy. And she told him that she was going to go, that she had to go back to Puerto Rico on Sunday instead of Monday. And that started an argument between the two about how much she was gone. And when she got home, according to Stephen, they continued to argue for about 20 minutes. And he told her it wasn't fair to the kids that she was gone so much. And according to Stephen, she said tough, and then she called for a ride and was picked up in a black by a black sedan, which he assumed was the airport car service. So Hughes, again, is like, why did you wait 5 days to report your wife missing?
Wait. How does he know it was a black sedan?
Because
wasn't she in Newark?
No, he when she got home. Are you listening to me?
I am listening to you.
When she got home, according to Stephen, they argued for 20 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just got confused.
They got into a fight. She basically said, whatever, I don't give a shit.
Which, and then she left.
Doesn't sound like her.
Like, right, but just then from what I know. Supposedly she left.
Yeah. And
allegedly.
So she called for a ride, and then she was picked up by what he thought was the airport car service. And okay. Hughes is like, why did you wait 5 days to report your wife missing? And Stephen told him that her employer had told him to wait.
That's fucking bullshit.
Yeah, you think? Like, this guy, man.
I feel like she sounds like a pretty valuable team member. Her employer probably would have been like, you should have done this, I don't know, 4 days ago and right. 23 hours.
Well, and what are the chances that he even contacted her employer?
Zero.
Probably.
Null.
So, yeah.
Less than 0%.
He said that he had tried calling her cell over and over again on the weekend, and she didn't answer, so he called her boss on Monday, and he told Stephen that she wasn't at work and that they needed to have a company meeting before he called the police. Yeah, okay.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Right?
My ass.
Exactly. He also said that he called her mother and sister and that they hadn't heard from her either. So Stephen told Deputy Hughes that.
So it sounds like with the calling of the mother and the sister that he's like trying to be like, oh, you haven't heard from her. Oh, no.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's going on.
Exactly. Stephen told Hughes that the company that Tara worked for demilitarized chemical weapons, and he theorized that she had been kidnapped by terrorists and may have even been exposed to nerve gas.
Oh, no. Dun, dun, dun. He's so weird.
The plot thickens.
This guy.
I'm just speculating that she's been kidnapped by terrorists.
He reads too many, like, doomsday books.
Yeah, he's like.
If he even knows how to read.
Yeah, he's something.
Well, I guess he's reading his notes.
Basically, Deputy Hughes called bullshit on that. And Stephen, for some reason, told Hughes about Verena. And the deputy asked how old she was and if they were involved in a sexual relationship. And Hughes said that Stephen just like leaned back in his chair and said, she'll never tell, smiling while he answered. Fucking douche.
What a weirdo. That's like, I just feel like I hate coming back to the word weirdo because like that's all I got.
Is like weirdo.
He's weird.
And I just
he's just
keep
a liar.
He's a douche.
He's a liar.
Because I think a weirdo and a liar all get wrapped up into a douche.
Well, I don't disagree with that at all in the slightest. Like big fat douche canoe.
Yes. That can sail right on or that can canoe right on down that stream.
Yeah. That stream leading to hell.
Straight to it, because he's going there anyway.
He's not on the highway to hell. He's on the fucking river to hell.
In his douche canoe.
Yes. With curdled rotten milk in his bowl.
Ooh, gross.
Yeah,
that's Hughes exactly summarized why. That Stephen believed if he came into the police station to report his wife missing, and he filed a full report that he wouldn't be considered a suspect. So Hughes told Stephen that the detectives would be in touch. Sergeant Brian Kozlowski and Sergeant Pam McLean were the detectives that were assigned to Tara's case. And they right away began contacting people who were close to Tara. You know, they didn't go to Stephen because they already had his bullshit story from the deputy.
Right, they already had his weird.
Yeah, and the deputy's like, hey, man.
He's suspicious.
Yeah.
He's maybe like, let's not talk to him until we
let's talk
to some other people.
Let's talk to some other people. So they contacted her boss who said that Tara was supposed to be back in Puerto Rico on Monday, February 12th, and that she wasn't supposed to fly back early on Sunday, like Steven said that Tara had told him. And Tara wasn't known to be the type of person to walk out on her family. And the Washington Group's security reported that there was no activity on Tara's work email, cell phone, or company credit card after February 9th.
Oh.
Yeah. They then talked to Tara's sister, Alicia, who told detectives that Steven had called her on the 13th and left a message on her voicemail and said, "Can you call me when you get a minute? It's no big deal."
Huh. So, it's no big deal?
It's no big deal.
Your sister's missing, but like, don't worry about
it. It's whatever. Just call me when you get a chance.
Fuck.
When she called him back, he told her that...
Row your boat.
When she called him back, he told her that Tara was missing. And, you know, I think that's kind of a big deal, but I don't have a sister.
That's why I said row, row, row your boat.
He told
her... Gently down the stream. Hell, 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 hell. Life is but your nightmare.
Yeah. He told Alicia, in quotes, "I wouldn't be surprised if she's shacked up in a motel with some guy somewhere."
Like, oh my seriously, God.
Right? Her sister.
What the fuck? When,
after he calls her and he's like, "Hey, it's no big deal. Just whatever. Call me."
What in the delusional fucking shit is going on with this guy?
Yeah, he's something.
This is like, I don't know. Is this worse than the guy from the Easter Sunday? Is this not worse? The delusions.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. He's something.
I feel like we need to make a scale.
So the detectives went to the Grant home at about 5:30 that same day on February 14th to perform a casual search and to get as much information as they could about Tara's disappearance. Kozlowski talked to Steven while McLean talked to Verena. Steven changed his story, saying that Tara had planned to go back to Puerto Rico on Monday, not Sunday, as he previously said. Where's your fucking notebook, dude?
Right? You forgot what you said?
Yeah.
Probably keep better track of it. And then he has on like six lines underneath his last note. He's like, "And this is where I buried the body."
Detectives looked around the house and Steven logged into their bank accounts and their credit cards so that they could see that there was no activity by Tara since the 9th. Like, why volunteer all the information?
Right.
Like, "Hey, let me log in. I'll show you. She hasn't." Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like he's also cocky.
Yeah. You think? Know? Well, I mean, if he hadn't seen her since the 9th, if she left on the 9th, you would think she'd be like, "Oh, I kind of want to get a bottle of water at the airport."
Yeah. Or a bottle of wine because I'm married to this motherfucker.
Oh, my God. She's going to need more than a bottle of wine. She's going to need like a fucking bottle of Tito's. Drown it out.
Detective Kozlowski noted how Steven was shaking while he was controlling his mouse. Then they went into the garage and looked at both of their vehicles. Detective Kozlowski noticed that there were some notebooks in the back of Tara's Isuzu Trooper that had work-related to-do lists and stuff. And so he thought it was odd that if she was going back to work, that she would leave those behind.
Right. She'd leave her work stuff.
Right.
With at home when she works in Puerto Rico and she lives in Michigan.
And she does fucking it all the time. Weird. So it's not like she'd be like, "Oh my God, I totally forgot."
Right.
Like, it's her routine to grab her shit, I'm sure. So detectives asked Steven about the scratch on his nose and he said that he got it working in the machine shop. And then he also showed them a scratch on his hand that he said that he got trying to start the snowblower and also a bruise on his leg, which he wasn't sure how he got.
He's like, "Look at all these injuries I have."
Exactly.
All these self-inflicted injuries.
So he's just so confident, right? Volunteering all this fucking information. "Here, look at our banks. Look at all these wounds I have."
Well, that's why my word is weird.
Okay, I'll go with that. Then Detective Kozlowski asked about their marriage, and he said that he was faithful, but that Tara had had an affair.
Oh, my God.
Right.
This guy.
I'm sure he's faithful because he doesn't have a choice.
Right. He's faithful because no one fucking wants him.
And I think she probably doesn't have time to have an affair, it sounds like.
Yeah, I feel like that's true. And also, I feel like roles are actually probably reversed, that he's probably the one that's had an affair with one of the nannies. And they just didn't know the word for assault and how to report that.
And Tara sounds like a good person.
She sounds like an amazing person.
Verena seemed like she didn't want to talk to Detective McLean, but she did say that she had gone out dancing on Friday night, so Friday, February 9th, right?
Yeah.
With some other au pairs, and that she got home about 11:30. She said when she got home, Stephen told her that he and Tara had gotten into a fight and that Tara left. Verena also told Detective McLean that it was not normal for Tara to not call and check on the children for more than a day. Verena ended her interview saying that she was meeting some friends and she had to, like, scoot. So she's like,
I'm sorry, I gotta go.
Yeah, exactly.
I have prior plans and my boss going missing.
Exactly. Like, I don't want to talk to you anymore, so I gotta go. Detective McLean then talked to Lindsay, so that's the daughter, right?
Right.
Who showed Detective McLean around the house. And when they got to the master bedroom, Detective McLean noted that none of Tara's clothes or shoes seemed to be gone, and that there were three pairs of glasses on the nightstand. Like, you might want those for work, you know.
On her side of the bed.
Yeah.
Not exactly. His.
Yep. And as detectives were leaving, they asked Stephen to come down to the station for more questioning, to which Stephen replied, "You don't think I did something to my wife, do you?" And then he broke down crying. And the detectives at this point were pretty much convinced that he had killed his wife. They did, however, continue to explore other avenues, hoping to find Tara or to find out what happened to Tara. So they didn't just, like, straight up focus on him, because you know how sometimes they say that. Detectives just get fixated and then, like, the real criminal goes
yeah.
because they're like, this is the person. But they right. were, like, pretty sure that this was a person.
Yeah, this is their number one person of interest for sure.
But they did explore other avenues.
Okay.
The next morning, the sheriff's office received a fax from a lawyer named David Grimm. And it read, quote, "Because of the tone of your February 14th, 2007 interrogation of Mr. Grant at his home, it is my humble opinion that it is necessary for me to provide a buffer between your department and Mr. Grant. Just as Mr. Grant answered all of your questions last night, he will continue to answer all of your questions in the future. I believe it's necessary so that there will be no misunderstandings, that all of your future questions be submitted in writing, which will in turn be immediately answered in writing." He's already lawyered up.
Yeah, that's pretty sus.
Yeah. On February 16th, Stephen failed the signal for a turn that he was making, and he was pulled over. And when the officer ran his plates, he saw that Stephen was driving with a suspended license.
Oh, God.
For not paying parking tickets, running a red light.
Oh, my gosh. I'm sorry. I'm just like, it's just like one thing after another.
Uh-huh. Yeah, he's not a quality person.
No, he's a weirdo.
Yeah.
He's just weird. He's just plain simple, not good people, weirdo, douchebag, douche canoe. I'm assuming he's probably ugly. That doesn't help.
So he's driving with a suspended license, and the suspended license is for not paying parking tickets, running a red light. And he's had his license suspended more than one occasion. So the officer had no choice but to arrest him for driving with a suspended license. He wasn't held for too long before he was released, but he's a liar, and he claimed that he was held for hours and heavily interrogated and treated harshly.
Oh my gosh.
But they have records to back up.
They have, like, this on record that he was only there for an hour and 3 minutes.
Exactly.
He had enough time to get booked, and then he was out.
And then he was out. So on February 20th, investigators found emails between Stephen and an ex-girlfriend, Dina Hardy, where Stephen accused Tara of having an affair with her boss and saying, "Oh, by the way, I want to see you naked."
Oh my gosh. This, I don't even think I need to say it. Carry on.
Oh, thank you. Tara's phone records showed that at the time, Stephen claimed that Tara called for her ride, the phone already had no activity on it, because he's citing the notebook and giving detailed accounts of time.
Okay.
Right? Back to the notebook.
Yeah, the notebook. Yeah.
On February 22nd, police officially announced that they considered Tara's disappearance to be a probable death/murder and that they were looking for a body at this point.
Yeah, you think?
Stephen brought up the Stony Creek Metro Park Nature Preserve area a lot, which is a 4,400-acre preserve heavily used by residents in the area. So police organized a search of this area, a police plane doing an aerial search of the area thought that they spotted a body, but it turned out to just be a deer carcass.
Ew.
After one day of searching and turning up nothing, police moved on to other possibilities of where she might be. Stephen started talking to the media a ton and saying that the
police... Chris Watts!
And saying, or what's his name? Peterson, Scott Peterson.
Oh my gosh, yeah, him too.
Mm-hmm. So he started saying that he
They learned this from him.
Stephen started saying that the police were treating him unfairly and they weren't really looking for his wife. He told the media that he had hired a former FBI agent turned private investigator to look for Tara, but the police wouldn't share any information with the private investigator.
Liar.
He became less forthcoming in his conversations with police.
Liar.
And he also started maligning Tara's character with the media. When asked about Tara as a mother, he said, quote, she loves her kids, but you know, most mothers don't travel 5 days a week. I've heard comments from people like, what kind of mother would leave their babies all week long? She's gone 5 days a week, then she's there on the weekends. It wasn't weird for her to come in, kiss the kids, and leave again. Well, I'm sorry. Is that a good mother? No, it's not. It's a bad mother.
Carry on. Okay. Carry on. You know what I'm going to say. Mm-hmm. Everyone knows what I'm going to say.
Of course.
I hate him. There we go. That's something new.
This is just a ploy to make it seem like Tara would take off without thinking twice about it. Right,
that she's a bad person, that, mm-hmm. you know, she doesn't care about her kids, that... she's selfish and is stepping out on her marriage and XYZ when really it's actually Stephen.
She's working her ass off to support this family and clearly in kind of a luxurious style, right?
Right.
So he's just a fucker.
Yeah, he's a user.
Police issued a statement saying that they had never been contacted by a private investigator. I know you're shocked to hear that.
Yeah, that's why I said liar.
Because there wasn't one.
Yeah, he's a liar.
Because he's a fucking liar.
Wait, can you repeat that?
He's a fucking liar.
Can we have that for the record?
He's a fucking liar.
Let me get my notebook.
It's in my notes right here because he's a fucking liar.
I love it.
On February 28th, Sheila Werner was hiking and collecting trash in the Stony Creek Metro Park Nature Preserve. She found a bag with what appeared to be blood on it and a few other bags containing rubber gloves and metal shavings. So she grabbed the bags and she went home and she called the police. And when they arrived to gather the items, Sheila took them back to the spot where she'd found the bags. Not wanting to get too excited, they sent the bags off for analysis. The bags also contained some animal hair, so they thought it could possibly be from someone poaching a deer. The blood indeed was determined to be human, and the hairs upon visual inspection were a match to Grant's dog, Bentley.
Oh, gosh.
Mm-hmm.
At least he didn't, like, substitute it with eggs. So there was evidence.
Yeah. There was enough for police to get a search warrant.
Good.
On March 2nd, they went back to Grant's home and... also to the machine shop owned by his dad. And when the police arrived at the Grant house, Stephen was just pulling in the driveway. And there was a news crew waiting for him because he had set up an interview.
Oh, my
gosh. So it just so happens that the police are there to serve a search warrant and he's got a news crew there.
Right. Well, who do you think they really want to see?
Exactly. But the news crew doesn't know that the police are coming.
Well, yeah.
So I'm like, ha ha, fucker. You got caught in your own web.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. So these interviews were at the request of Stephen, and he called the media channels as much as 5 times a day.
Oh, my goodness. Trying to get
coverage for himself.
A weirdo. That's just weirdo. He's like an attention whore.
Well, and he's obviously super narcissistic, and he thinks he's smarter than everybody else.
Yeah, he's like super... self-concerned.
Yeah, he's something.
I don't want to use the word self-centered, but he's self-concerned. I think he is
self-centered.
I think he is, but he's very self-concerned.
Well,
he's like, this is my image I have to uphold too.
Right. And I want to make my wife look like a piece of shit.
Yeah.
So they only had a search warrant, right? So Stephen was allowed to leave. So he took Bentley for a walk and then he called a friend to pick him up and he asked the friend to drive him to a relative's house where the kids were staying. And the friend was like, hey, I'm like busy. I got stuff to do. So you can just take my truck. and you can just go to the relative's house.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. So meanwhile, that's a
bad idea. Doesn't his friend know any of this is going on?
No, I don't think so. I think he's like, oh, hey, I'm just walking my dog. And, you know, I don't know.
He doesn't watch the news.
His friend seemed like, you know, he's like, here, just have my car. Meanwhile, crime scene technicians were busy gathering evidence from the Grant home, spraying luminol and all that jazz, right?
Right.
Kozlowski and McLean on site for the search were in the garage to stay out of the way and wait for any compelling evidence. While in the garage, Kozlowski noticed a green plastic tote that had the words boys' clothes written on it. This tote had not been there the first time that the detectives were in the house, so he took the lid off the tote and it contained a black garbage bag. When he opened the black garbage bag, inside was a woman's torso with a black bra still on it.
Oh my gosh.
So no extremities, no head, just her torso. The torso had sticks and leaves stuck to it, indicating that at the very least, the torso had been outside. Detectives had already suspected that he had dumped her body at the Stony Creek Nature Preserve. They got a large search party, which included dogs. Throughout the day, they found body parts strewn all about, including her head.
Oh my gosh, so he hacked her up too.
Yeah, he's a fucker. The medical examiner was brought in to document the scene. And because it was winter and it was Michigan, the body was pretty well preserved.
I was going to say she's going to be very well preserved.
Mm-hmm. So there was no doubt.
Well, that's why he wanted to leave the house, was because he knew that there were, quote, boys' clothes, unquote, in the garage.
Right.
Her torso.
There was no doubt that it was Tara because she was very well preserved. Of course, Stephen had no intention of going to see his kids. He used his friend's vehicle to just scoot on out of there.
Right.
He knew that they would find the tote and, you know, game over.
Yeah.
He drove to his sister Kelly's house searching for a gun, but he didn't turn one up. But he did find a bottle of Vicodin. He left Bentley at his sister's house and then he took off again. He was heading to Lansing, but on the way to Lansing, he grabbed a bottle of Jack and a black cap gun and a black marker to cover the red cap on the cap gun so it looked like a real gun. Because you know how cap guns have like that red on the barrel so that like if a kid pulls it on a cop or something, they don't get shot.
Yeah.
They know that it's not a real gun. Yeah. So he got a Sharpie to, you know, cover that up. Real. So obviously it seems like he's planning suicide by cop because it's an easy way out for this motherfucker.
Yeah. Fuck.
By now, police were tracking his bank and credit cards in hopes to track him down. He called his sister from the Wilderness State Park and told her where he was, and she called police to report the information. Sheriffs immediately went to the park. The search for Stephen included a Coast Guard helicopter.
A helicopter. An alligator from hell. Helligator.
He's a helligator.
Which I'm pretty sure all alligators look like they've been through hell and back. So
it was a helicopter, in all actuality, with night vision. Soon, his friend's bright yellow truck was spotted at the end of a hiking trail.
Well, thank God his friend had a bright yellow truck. What are the odds of that? In my head, I was picturing like a red truck
or black.
My brain went to red. Okay. I don't know why.
Well, it was just bright red. Yellow. Because I feel like bright yellow is not the obvious choice for a truck.
Yeah, well, luckily in this case it was.
Right?
He's like, let me bring the most. Well, maybe that's why, because it was obvious to see.
So the truck was spotted at the end of a hiking trail, and their authorities found the toy gun, a bottle of Jack, a candy bar, a notebook.
Wow.
And what? A pair of pliers. So this guy,
he's planning on ripping his own teeth out.
He's not only a murderer, but he's a fucking litterer.
Oh.
He's just a bad person. He's a bad person.
No good.
He's no good.
So no good. Very bad.
With the helicopter's night vision, they finally located Stephen curled up under a tree with no shoes, no coat. And it was about 6:30 in the morning on March 3rd. The officers carried/drug Stephen back to the area where he could be airlifted out. Then he was transported to the Harbor Springs Airport from there and taken by ambulance to North Michigan Hospital, where he was treated for frostbite, hypothermia. When he arrived at the hospital, his body temperature was 87 degrees, and he also had a possible narcotics ingestion because of
The Vicodin.
Yeah, that was taken from his sister's house. He told the nurse that he took 5 Vicodin and 16 Benadryl.
Oh, good. So he lived.
Yeah.
That's what I like to hear.
Once the police announced Once the police announced to the media that Grant had been apprehended and charged with murder, his lawyer dropped him as a client.
Huh.
Unbeknownst to Stephen, who asked to speak with his lawyer after his arrest, he was then informed by detectives that he was currently without legal representation.
Good.
Good is right.
Douche.
McCloskey or Kozlowski and McLean, I put them all into one person, but they're not.
Miss McCloskey?
They're two different ones.
Mrs. McCloskey from Desperate Housewives?
Always the Desperate Housewives references.
What?
Detective Kozlowski and Detective McLean drove 4 hours to Northern Michigan Hospital to interview Stephen. Stephen began to explain what happened. He said that they had just talked like normal throughout the course of February 9th and that her flight was delayed in Newark, and that she would be home later than expected. When she got home, they just had like normal casual conversation until the topic of her travel schedule came up, and Tara told him that she was heading back to Puerto Rico to meet with her boss for a project that they were working on. And Stephen said that she spent too much time with her boss and supposedly she told him to fuck off, which if he were my husband, I would most definitely tell him to fuck off.
Yeah.
So I believe that.
Right. No, I get that. I understand that. I would also tell him to fuck off because, hello, you're the one who wants the bougie ass lifestyle and I'm doing it for you, asshole.
Right. Stephen's version of events goes like this. Tara started to walk away from him and he grabbed her by the arm and said, "We're not done with this conversation." She then slapped him and he hit her back and she fell backwards. After that, she got up and told him that she was leaving and taking the children and that she would ruin his life.
Oh my gosh.
He claimed that Tara said, "You're going to be fucking homeless. You're a piece of shit." It was at this point.
I don't blame her.
But this is his version.
Right. But if this is actually what happened, I don't blame her.
It was at this point that Stephen said that he started choking her. Once he started, he knew he couldn't stop because he didn't want to go to jail. Once he knew that she was dead, he covered her face with either a t-shirt or a pair of boxer shorts. He couldn't remember. Then he went downstairs and he cried.
Oh, poor you. I just killed my wife.
Yeah.
I'm so sad.
Then he sent a text to Verena and told her not to rush home. Tara was going to be late, so she might as well stay out with her friends. Then he went back to the bedroom where Tara laid there dead. Stephen wrapped a belt around her neck, and McLean asked him if she was still breathing, and he said no. So then she asked, "Well, then why did you do that?" And he said that he was using it to drag her downstairs. While their children slept in their bedrooms right next door.
What the fuck?
Then he dragged her out of the garage and would put her back in the back of her trooper. So her Isuzu trooper.
Yeah.
And he was just finishing up doing this when Verena came back to the house. Grant was yelling at Verena just to go. And Verena didn't understand why he was yelling at her. And then he said, "Oh, shit, I thought you were Tara. We had a fight and she left." Verena asked him how he got the scratch on his nose. And he said that Tara had hit him prior to leaving, going back to Puerto Rico. So he tells Verena that she's Tara and to get the fuck out. So that's why he's yelling at her.
Right.
But I mean, obviously he wants Verena to get the fuck out because he's in the middle of hiding his wife's body.
Yeah, because he's in the middle of being a piece of shit. Oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he sucks. He just sucks so bad. And he's dragging her body down the stairs with a belt around her neck while their kids are sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh. I just like, this is your wife. You're a fucking dick.
Yeah, he's a horrible human being. He somehow totally convinced Verena that that's what had happened. Stephen planned on dumping her body the next day, but instead, he confirmed that his dad was still out of town and he took Tara to the machine shop and put her down on a piece of plastic and
hacked her up there.
Mm-hmm. Because remember how there were metal shavings in the bag?
I just didn't put that two and two together.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm. 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 So he put her down on a piece of plastic and he tried to cut off her hands with a handsaw. No pun intended. That's what he did. But he couldn't do it because he wasn't strong enough. So he took all the papers out of her briefcase and he shredded them. Then he took her work laptop and cut it into pieces with a bandsaw. And this sent metal and glass flying everywhere. And while he was cleaning that up, he got a piece of glass in his hand, which he dug out with tweezers. And we don't really care what happened to you, Steven. So I don't know why you're telling us this.
Yeah, nobody gives a fuck about you.
Exactly. He put all of her belongings into a bag, which later he put into a dumpster in his childhood neighborhood. He thought about cutting her up with a bandsaw, but then he realized that that would make a huge mess. So instead, he grabbed a few hacksaw blades and wrapped a towel around the end of the blade and proceeded to cut his wife at every joint in her body, completely dismembering her.
Oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's something.
That's like,
oh my gosh.
Horrifying.
He put her body into black garbage bags, then into a green tote. He put the towels and the blades in the tote as well. He then loaded up all the evidence in the trooper and he cleaned up the machine shop. Then he headed home to figure out what the fuck now is he going to do? He left his house at about 3 a.m. on Monday morning, driving around in Tara's Trooper, trying to decide where to dump her. He obviously decided on the Stony Creek Metro Park Nature Preserve. He brought a sled from the house so he could more easily drag the tote across the snow. The sled got away from him, and when he finally caught up with it, the sled had tipped over and dumped the bags out of the tote. And yeah, to her body, you know. Yeah. Then he took the bag with her torso in it and he buried it. Then he put the rest of the bags back on the sled and left all the evidence in the woods, and then he went home. He went back later in the day on Monday and then dispersed the bags and his shoes and other evidence in the woods. Then he went back again on Tuesday because he wanted to try to hide the evidence a little bit better. He dug up the things that he had buried and loaded the stuff back up on the sled again and took it deeper into the woods. Then he went into town and paid some parking tickets and fines because he knew that he was going to go and report his wife missing.
I feel disgusted right now.
Mm-hmm. And he wanted to look good, so he doesn't want to have these.
I feel just like absolutely disgusted. Mm-hmm. Like I'm ready to sage.
It's bad.
This is horrible.
Yeah, it's bad. After the police announced that they were going to search the park, Stephen panicked and he went to pick up her torso. And that's when he took it back to the machine shop and he hid her there. Her torso was frozen and it was wrapped in more garbage bags. So he figured he could leave it there for a few days and it would be fine. It wouldn't like stink or anything because it's frozen. She's frozen. It's horrible. Police turned up nothing in their search, and Stephen thought that he had gotten away with Tara's murder, right?
Of course he did, because he's a cocky asshole.
Exactly. On March 1st, he retrieved Tara's torso from the machine shop and brought it back to the house so he could dispose of it yet again. He thought that he was free and clear, so like there's no rush, right? Because they've already been to the house and he's holding all these press conferences saying that she's horrible and he's, oh my God, where is she? And the police aren't doing their job and yada, yada, blah, blah, blah. And I've hired a former FBI private investigator. And so he's like, I'm off the hook. Of course, he was wrong. And the search warrant was served on the 2nd. So he brought her body back to the house on the 1st. The search warrant served on the 2nd. And while relaying all of this to detectives, he also revealed that when his sister had called the police to tell him where Stephen was, it was also so that they could recover his body because he didn't want to rot in the wild. Like, motherfucker, you deserve to rot in the wild. Although yeah. He deserves to be in prison, so I'm glad that he didn't rot in the wild.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was going to say. I feel like justice is more so a priority here than, I don't know, fucking animals devouring his body while he's alive really slowly.
Right, you thought that through. Stephen then told detectives that he and Verena had started having a relationship and that he had convinced her that Tara had left him. Verena testified in court that she loved and trusted Grant and didn't believe he was guilty of killing his wife, Tara, until he called her and confessed on March 2nd while he was on the run from police. Verena also testified that Grant was upset with Dina Hardy, the ex-girlfriend that he was emailing with, because she gave her emails to a local Detroit paper who printed them, and she also gave them to the sheriff's department. Verena testified on February 1st, Stephen told her, "You're beautiful and I want to sleep with you." Over the next few days, Tara's still in Puerto Rico. Steven sent inappropriate emails to this 19-year-old au pair, caregiver of his children, motherfucker. And she just kind of laughed it off, shrugged it off, whatever, right? She's like, I like my job. I like living in this house. I'm just right. On February 9th, he dropped his pajama bottoms in front of her in his bedroom and then asked her if she wanted to have sex. To which she replied, ew. No, right?
What a pig.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's such a fucking turn on.
That's disgusting.
Yeah. Like, no foreplay, no kissing. Just, like, drop your fucking PJs.
Let's go
like,
now.
Let's do it. So, anyway, yeah. She said no thanks, but no thanks.
Thanks, but I'm good. I'm going to do anything else.
However, later that night was the first time that they slept together. The next night, they had...
Marina!
Mm-hmm. The next night, they had oral sex and slept in Grant's bedroom together. And then the next morning, the day of Tara's murder, so February 9th, six-year-old Lindsay walked in on them in Grant's bedroom when the two were just waking up. Verena said she was hiding under a blanket, but come on.
Oh, so that's probably another motive, is that Lindsay's going to tell her mommy what she saw.
Yeah, I don't... Verena said she was hiding under a blanket and she didn't think...
Yeah, but only two bodies in a bed.
That's what I'm saying.
And your mom isn't home.
Right. That night, the night of the murder, Grant did the whole, like, she left me BS. And on February 10th and 11th, so Saturday and Sunday, when Tara would have been home, these are Verena's normal days off, right? Because Tara's home. Grant asked her to watch the kids for 6 hours while he ran errands and went to his dad's machine shop. Is right.
Yeah, that's what I got right now.
So that's obviously pretty damning corroboration.
Yeah.
After reporting Tara missing on the 13th, he told Verena to keep their relationship a secret so that police wouldn't think that he had anything to do with her disappearance.
Of course. And she's obviously very agreeable.
She's smitten with him.
She's agreeable with him. Yeah.
Yeah. Because she loves him, I guess.
Yeah,
she said this two-week relationship.
She's like, I love you.
Yeah, her testimony was that she loved and trusted him. So along with poor testimony girl. From Alicia about his call to her and his confession on December 21st, 2007, Stephen was found guilty on charges of second degree murder because the jury couldn't agree if it was premeditated or not. Grant was sentenced to 50 to 80 years in prison for the second degree murder charge with an additional 6 to 10 years for the mutilization of a corpse with the sentences to run concurrently. So the 6 to 10 is going to go in conjunction with the 50 to 80.
That's bullshit.
It is bullshit. A custody battle over Lindsay and Ian ensued between Alicia and Kelly. After the conviction of Grant, he gave up his parental rights. Ultimately, Alicia was granted primary custody and Kelly was granted visitation.
Not that there's anything wrong with Kelly that I know of, but I just feel like Alicia was Tara's person.
Well, and I don't know. It's like, we don't, you know, obviously,
that's
Kelly,
what I'm saying. Kelly's, we don't know anything really about Kelly.
But the court's probably like, who knows what their reasoning was, but, you know, would you as a child want to be raised by the sister of your dad who killed your mom?
No.
Probably not. But, you know, she's probably a fine person. We don't know.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, she's probably, yeah, like you said, a fine person. But Alicia was Tara's best friend, her sister.
Exactly. So on Christmas of 2008, a year after Grant's conviction, Lindsay started telling Alicia and her husband, Eric, that they had witnessed their father strangle their mother. So Ian and Lindsay saw this go down.
Oh, my gosh.
And Alicia said that she was afraid that that had been the case because of the layout of the bedrooms. And they were all on the second floor and they were all next to each other. And after that, Lindsay said that she was terrified of her father, which
rightfully so.
Yeah, it seems definitely like you would be. Tara's family sued Grant civilly in court and was awarded $50 million, but he doesn't have any money. So it's more of a personal victory.
Right.
Because Tara was the one with the money.
You know? I'm assuming.
Grant didn't get it because he killed her.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tara Grant's family and friends have organized an annual 5K run in Tara's memory to raise money to combat domestic violence. On June 13th of 2008, Stephen Grant's father committed suicide by a self-inflicted gunshot wound. Speculation is that he was ashamed and humiliated by what his son had done, and he just couldn't live with it.
See, so that makes me
so many
sad.
Lives affected by this. Like, just get a fucking divorce.
Well, see, that's what makes me sad is that, you know, like, there's constantly the nature versus nurture argument, but, like, his dad didn't play any role in murdering Tara.
No.
Like.
And his kids shouldn't have had to witness him kill their mom.
Well, I was just going to say, I would be terribly ashamed if that were my child as well. But am I going to take my own life? No, I'm probably going to do something to support in her honor.
Right. Something positive. But you don't know. I mean, right. Maybe his dad battled with depression or something. We don't know.
We don't know.
What we do know is that there were a ton of lives affected by this, which always in a murder.
Yeah, every single time.
Exactly. But, you know, the kids seeing it, the dad committing suicide, all bad things. All bad things.
So sad.
In March of 2010, Grant lost his final appeal in state court and his 50 to 80 year sentence was upheld. His appeal was based on claims that the pretrial publicity and notoriety of the case prejudiced the jury, to which I say,
fuck that.
Don't hold a fucking press conference every day when you fucking killed your wife.
Well, I was going to say, I don't understand how the jury's biased about the media and all that could, like, impact this, because they literally found the torso in his garage.
And he confessed.
They found her torso in his garage. Let me repeat that.
Yeah.
He did it.
And all of the media attention that he brought to himself.
Yeah,
he brought it to himself.
He did it.
So, like, if you kill your
spouse. He did 100% of this to himself.
If you kill your spouse, don't be fucking holding press conferences.
Right.
Like, maybe lay low.
Yeah. Perhaps.
Don't be saying she's a piece of shit and stuff. Like, be crying and at least pretending you're sad. And don't be calling media stations 5 times a day to try to get coverage. Like, what the fuck, dude? He also claimed that he was denied access to an attorney before confessing to police. However, Detective Kozlowski and McLean both made sure that he was aware of his rights and what he was being arrested for, and also told him that his lawyer had quit. So at this point, that's when he should have asked for a new lawyer before he made his confession. But given that he had lawyered up the day before the first fucking round of questioning, he knew he was entitled to an attorney and that he should have an attorney present.
Oh my goodness. You can't.
I can't. But he's just a fucking cocky asshole.
Yeah, he is. He's a straight up piece of fucking shit.
Yeah, he's not a good person.
No, he's the worst.
In March of 2015, U.S. District Court Judge David Lawson also denied Grant's petition for writ of habeas corpus. Grant claimed that the police improperly obtained his confession while he was being treated in the hospital for hypothermia and exposure. The judge also denied that the pretrial publicity made it impossible for him to have a fair trial. And Lawson said that officials in Macomb County took extraordinary measures to ensure that a fair and impartial jury was seated. So, like, he went all the way up to the U.S. District Court trying to appeal his conviction.
And who's his legal counsel?
I don't know. But in March of 2015.
Who was helping him fight this hard?
I don't know.
And how was he getting all this money to fight this hard?
I don't know. I should have looked it up.
Because that's what I'm wondering, is how is he getting all this money to fight this hard?
Well, and they only get entitled to a prosecutor, to a public defender, and you could do as many appeals until your appeals are.
Well, you get a certain number of appeals.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You get as many until they're squashed. So it was squashed in state court. Like, they're like, dude, you're fucking done. Like, there's no fucking more appealing. Because his final appeal, I don't know how many there were prior, but his final appeal was in 2010. So then he pushed to get it all the way up to the U.S. District Court.
Yeah.
So the United States of America is wasting their fucking taxpayer dollars, resources in court
To tell him that he still sucks.
Yeah, because this motherfucker cocky enough to think that he's going to get out of it.
You probably get to live the rest of your life with us in jail.
Yeah, rot in hell, motherfucker.
I'm just assuming at this point he's like in his 30s because it's the early two. So he was born in 1970. And so he was 36.
2007.
So he's 37 when this happens. He's going to be there for 60 to 80 years.
50 to 80.
Oh, yeah. He'll be in there for the rest of his life. He'll die in jail. I'm
guessing that if he gets put up for parole, he's not getting it.
Oh, absolutely not. Well, he won't be put up for parole before 50 years, I'm guessing.
I don't think so, no.
And he'll be 86 at that point. So just
a young whippersnapper.
Yeah.
So that's it. That's the story of Tara Grant.
That's really sad.
That's really sad.
Tragic.
It's tragic. She worked so hard to get so far ahead in life.
And she was a good person, it sounds like. Mm-hmm. It sounds like she's somebody I would have liked to have known.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's so sad.
Worked so hard to give her family like the best of the best. And
yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I really liked what you said about her, that, you know, she wanted her kids to be tutored, but then she had to take a step back and also realize, hey, they're just children.
Mm-hmm.
So I need to be fair with them also, mm-hmm. but while I'm pushing them to be the best they can be.
Exactly.
Like, that just made me like her even more. And I just have a lot of feelings. I don't want to draw any comparisons, okay? Let me just start by saying that. But what I'm going to say is comparative. So, what I wanted to say was that, like, this really sucks. Like, spouse ones really suck. Because, like, the Emma Walker with Riley, like, she was trying to get out. He's just a fucking bad person, right? But she was trying to get out.
Mm-hmm.
She was trying desperately to get out.
Mm-hmm.
And then he still fucked everything up and killed her. And still really fucking unfortunate. Obviously, it's unfortunate what happened. But she was trying to leave because the writing was on the wall and she finally got there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
She finally saw all the red flags and that, you know, this probably isn't good.
My person.
Yeah, this probably is weird that he's, you know, stalking me and showing up to my house wearing all black and supposedly being kidnapped and thrown on the side of the road outside of where I am. You know, it's probably weird. She finally came to see that. And, like, with Junko, right? Like, they were just fucking bad people. And she had no ties to them whatsoever. Those were just horrible people. This is Tara's husband.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is somebody that you have children with and you vowed to the rest of your life, like, you know, for better, for worse, till death do us part. And he chased her. He chased her hard.
Mm-hmm.
And then for him just to do this...
Yeah.
To end her and to fucking ruin it all.
Yeah.
He's just sucks.
He does.
But like I said, I wasn't trying to draw any comparisons. All those people really fucking suck. But this is somebody she had a lot of trust in.
Well, that's the bottom line.
That's what I
she trusted him.
Well, that's what I'm trying to say is that, you know, in all those cases, and every single true crime case, it sucks. But she trusted this guy with everything to leave her children with him.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, well, and I also, I'm just going to say one more bad, sad thing is that the detectives speculated that, and the medical examiner speculated that she probably wasn't dead when he drug her down the stairs by the belt because manual strangulation to kill someone
really hard.
So she was probably just unconscious.
Yeah.
And then he put the belt around her neck and drug her down the stairs. And that's probably what finished her. And it's speculative, but it sounds reasonable.
Does sound reasonable.
It just sucks.
I don't know, but that's what Samuel Little did.
And it sucks that Lindsay and Ian witnessed their dad do that.
Yeah, it is. It's horrible. This one just makes me really sad because of the amount of trust that was there.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, they were married and had kids and had a life together that she worked so hard for. He's the worst.
He is the worst.
That's all I got to say.
That's it.
Well, thank you.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah, I feel like I've heard this one, but not in so many details. Like, it started to sound familiar when you were talking about the Puerto Rico or going back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, that's familiar to me. But I've heard a bajillion things I'd never heard right now
yeah.
about it. So thank you for investing a lot of time in researching this.
Yeah, I did, because when I first started looking at, like, I couldn't find anything. And then when I found stuff, then I found stuff.
Right.
Obviously.
So thank you for putting a lot of time and energy and effort into this.
Well, you know, that's what we do.
It is what we do, but sometimes it's hard to find things. And from what I've heard about this case, I've never heard it in so much detail as you just gave it.
Oh, well, thank you.
So I appreciate it.
But that's, you know, we
want to. That's what we do. We're like, we cross-check everything we can find.
Yeah, we do. And we want to make sure that the person who we're talking about, the victim, always gets the best representation.
Yeah.
And we don't just skirt over them, because a lot of times the victim doesn't have a lot of information because they're the victim and they're kind of like, it's the whole media sensationalism. Like
of when you hear about killer.
Yeah. When you hear about these people that kill people, all you hear about is the killer.
Right.
You don't hear about the victim.
Well, and that's one thing that makes me feel bad about, guilty about the Samuel Little thing. But the women that I did have enough information on that wasn't just gory, ugly details that made everyone sad, you know, that wasn't just like, yeah, I raped her and then I killed her and I left her somewhere.
Right.
You know,
the women that had a story. The women that
had a story, I tried to bring those to the best of my ability that I could, what was out there, what I could find.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's us. Go team.
Go team.
Yeah.
Woo. Air five.
In a bad way.
That's us, a team, in a bad way?
No, it's just that we do this.
It's because it's interesting and other people are interested in it too. And I don't think it's bad that we want to shed light on victims' lives.
No, that definitely isn't bad. That we give the most effort into finding the most out about the victims that we can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like that's not a bad thing at all.
No, the whole thing is bad.
Yeah. The interest is bad.
Murder's bad.
Murder's really bad.
The interest isn't bad because everyone has it, because there are, 200 podcasts about murder?
Yeah.
And there are murder shows and murder movies and murder, murder, murder. So that's the bad.
Okay.
I forgot about all that stuff.
Follow us on Instagram.
@ That's Disturbing Podcast.
Visit our website.
HTTP. No.
You don't have to do that.
www.thatsdisturbingpodcast@gmail.com.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. That's our email. I'm ahead of myself. Skip the www's when you're emailing.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So our website is thatsdisturbingpodcast.com. Our email is thatsdisturbingpodcast@gmail.com.
I put there it all go. In one. It's fine.
Yeah, right. It's cool.
www.gmail.
www.gmail. @ That's Disturbing Podcast. I got this. On Instamail site.
I was trying to combine the three
that we have.
Thank you, everybody who's supporting us.
Like, yes.
Very nice.
Yeah. We I love it. I love seeing stuff.
Yeah, we appreciate it.
It sparks our hearts.
Yeah, very much so.
And it lights a fire under our ass.
Definitely.
Yeah, we're like, oh my God, we need to be amazing.
We need to keep providing entertainment.
Well, we already are amazing, but you know what I'm saying. Like, we need to continue this upward trend of like being amazing.
And that's Daphne being super humble.
Ridiculously.
On that note,
bye-bye.